80 years ago, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. All over the world lie scattered pieces of her puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to the Chasing Earhart podcast. I'm your host and the project creator, Chris Williamson. Hello and welcome to the Chasing Earhart podcast. I am your host and the project creator, Chris Williamson. Welcome to episode 12. Now, before we get into this week's episode, I want to talk about a few things that we have going on. Actually, this is the eve of hosting Tim Mellon in Atchison, Kansas. Tim flew in this evening, and we will be shooting with him for the documentary tomorrow. We'll be shooting an interview segment and a presentation segment that I think everybody will really enjoy. So Tim Mellon is here, and we'll be shooting with him all day tomorrow, and we'll be also recording his episode of the podcast very soon. So look out for a lot of Tim Mellon coming your way. So before we get into this week's episode, I wanted to introduce a very special guest that I have in studio with me this evening recording the intros and outros for episode 12, and that is our project coordinator, Vanessa. Vanessa, say hi to everybody out there.
Hey, everyone.
So why don't you tell everybody out there a little bit about your role within Chris Evan Films and what you do as the project coordinator for Chasing Earhart?
Sure, I get to do all the behind-scenes stuff, which is really fun. But I'm actually the liaison between our team and all of our guests that we have featured on our project. So when you, Chris, make the initial contact with our guests, I'm usually the second person that reaches out to them and lets them know about what we're going to cover, what questions we're going to be asking them so they can prepare beforehand, and if they have any needs. So I actually go out on set to make sure that the team and the guests have everything that they need so it can run smoothly.
Wow, so a woman of many hats. So a lot of people don't know that we record these episodes, we bundle them. So a lot of times we're recording on the weekends and we record 2 to 3 episodes and 4 episodes sometimes in one weekend with different guests just to accommodate their schedules. You're all about to listen to episode 12 with Kate Jerome, but we actually have 27 episodes in the can already recorded. We'll be releasing weekly. Can you tell everybody out there a little bit about what names people can expect to hear in the coming months on Chasing Earhart?
Yeah, absolutely. We have Mark Weakland, Sylvia Wrigley, Tom Maxwell, Nicole Swinford, part one of Todd Swindell, Andrew McKenna, John Jeffrey, and of course, they're about to hear Kate Jerome.
Okay, so why don't you tell everybody out there who we've recorded with so far in the month of October and how we're planning on rounding out the end of the month?
Well, we've already recorded with David Adler, who wrote a picture book of Amelia Earhart. We've also worked with David Bellarts, who is the son of Leo Bellarts. This weekend, we're happy to be able to host Tim Mellon from Pan Am. We're super excited about that. And coming up, we have Gary Quigg from Tiger, Dick Spink, who is featured in Amelia Earhart, The Lost Evidence. We have Ellie Norman, who is a young researcher. And rounding out the month, we have three authors. Candace Fleming, who wrote Amelia Lost, Susan Butler, who wrote East to the Dawn, and Sarah Stewart Taylor, who wrote Amelia Earhart, This Broad Ocean. So we have a lot of guests this month, and we're super excited to get into November.
So on to this week's interview. Now, a lot of folks out there have probably read the book of the woman who we're going to be speaking with this week and we're going to be featuring this week, and her name is Kate Jerome. She wrote a really fantastic book called Who Was Amelia Earhart? As a matter of fact, she wrote an entire series of Who Was books, and the Amelia Earhart book that we're talking about is actually one of the top sellers still on Amazon years after it's been released. Here in Atchison, it's probably one of the hottest sellers in the Amelia Earhart Birthplace Museum. They sell a lot of those books. It's a very great book written for young adults, kids and young adults alike, and it really covers Amelia Earhart's life and kind of who she was in the beginning and how she grew up to be the world-famous aviatrix. And it really covers a lot of unknown areas about Amelia Earhart as far as little stories that, you know, little stories and anecdotes about her life that a lot of people may not be familiar with. It's a really great first book to introduce your kids to and to read to your kids aloud. Kate is an author, she's an educator, she's been doing a lot of wonderful things throughout her career, and we're very happy to have her, very honored to have her. And in this interview, we discuss a lot of different topics as far as educating our children and why Amelia Earhart is a great fit for the Who Was books and why Amelia Earhart continues to resonate with kids and young adults alike. So this is a great interview. Kate Jerome's a wonderful woman, and we're very lucky to have her. So without further ado, I'm very proud and honored to give you Kate Jerome.
So our guest today is Kate Jerome. She is a children's author. She's written a lot of books, but the one we're going to talk about today, of course, is Who Was Amelia Earhart? It's actually on the bestseller list and on Amazon still, years after it's been released. It's a very popular book for kids. We're honored to have you, Kate. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you, Chris. I'm delighted to be here. I love your effort, Chasing Earhart.
Thank you so much. I'm sure you've heard some of the podcasts before. So what we'll do is we'll start like every other podcast. Can you tell everybody out there that's listening a little bit about your education and your professional background?
Oh, sure. You know, I graduated from Miami University in Ohio and started out as a high school biology teacher. But I moved to Chicago mid-year, and it's hard to get a teaching job when you're moving mid-year. So I remember picking up the Chicago Tribune newspaper, and I saw an ad for a science editor. I had no idea what that was, but I thought, maybe I can do it. So I went and applied at a publishing company called Scott Forsman Publishing Company, and it was the luckiest day of my professional life. I loved it. They hired me on the spot, and you know, when you love something, you tend to be good at it. So I was promoted without even trying, it seemed to me, because I was just privileged to come in and work every day. And the Cinderella story is about 13 years after I started in an entry-level position, I was named the first female president of Scott Forsman Publishing.
Wow, that ties right into what we're doing. That's incredible.
It was pretty cool. And at the same time, I was serving as a senior VP on HarperCollins executive board because they own Scott Forsman. So I did that for a couple years, but I really missed my creative work, my roots. And so I kind of decided to start a publishing or a company of my own. And I became an author and a program developer and worked for such publishers as National Geographic and Penguin, which did the Amelia book. And I've eventually published more than 200 children's books myself.
Wow.
And written lots of series. And then in 2015, I was privileged to be asked to be part of the inaugural class of the Stanford Distinguished Careers Institute, which was fabulous. If you can imagine having a whole year on a university campus and your only job is to think.
Yeah.
What a great gig that was.
I
worked with the Center on Longevity while I was at Stanford, and that sort of reignited my passion for intergenerational connections. So the last two series that I've produced, children's books for kids, are intended to encourage conversations between kids and their favorite adults. Yeah. So that's where I'm at.
All right. Well, that's a heck of a background. That's a good segue. Can you tell us what your earliest recollections are of Amelia Earhart?
Yeah, you know, this may sound a little strange, but I loved her name, Chris. It just captivated me. I heard this, you know, Amelia Earhart, it just sounded exciting. And, you know, I eventually looked it up. I love words. I think words are so powerful. And Earhart, I think, is actually a German surname composed of two German words meaning honor and bravery. Jeez. And of course, as soon as I heard that, I was totally hooked on the story.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. So you touched on it just a little while ago. You write a fantastic Who Was series of books as part of the 200 children's books that you've written in your career. Can you tell us what makes Amelia Earhart a good fit for a series like this in particular?
Well, this Who Was series, as you pointed out, is a fantastic New York Times bestselling series. And it tells stories of great innovators and trailblazers. So there was no question that Amelia needed to be included, and she was one of the first in the first batch that they did. She's just a star subject for all the reasons, the premise behind the series itself.
Right.
And you know, the thing I like a lot about the Who Was series is that we present these innovators in the context of the world that surrounded them.
Right.
So, for example, Amelia's parents took her to see the St. Louis World's Fair. So I'll put a little blurb in the book about what World's Fairs are. Or if Amelia was living at the time when women were seeking the vote. So I'll have a special feature on the women's suffrage movement. Right. I love presenting her in the context of what was shaping her at the time. I think it makes a really complex and interesting story.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into it. It's funny, writers, obviously, they write for all different types of reasons. But I find it interesting every time I speak with an author to talk with them about, you know, the genre that they decided to pick. You know, when we talk to folks like Brad Meltzer and we talk to different mm-hmm. authors that are out there that, you know, obviously tackle multiple different genres. But for you, I mean, what is it about writing for children and young adults and young kids that just kind of, what drew you to that?
Well, you know, I think really I'm a storyteller and a teacher at heart. Mm. You know, I love to talk to kids and explain new ideas to them. And when I see their little eyes light up and they get that little aha moment going, I love it. And, you know, they always teach me to look at things in a new way. I always joke, I used to live in Charleston, South Carolina, and we have a popular carriage tour in the downtown historic section. So there's horse-drawn carriages. And if you watch those carriage rides, you'll see a tour guide, of course, explaining the city's rich history. And all the adults are looking up at the beautiful buildings and the, you know, historic sites. And the kids are looking at the back of the horse, right, waiting for a malfunction with the diaper. And it just cracks me up because they have a totally different perspective on the tour of what the adults do.
That's funny. That's really funny. So I read your book a few times. I read it to my 7-year-old who loves it. One reason why I enjoy the book so much is the way you choose to approach it and approach the story. With Chasing Earhart, of course, we choose to focus more on how Amelia lived rather than how she died. And you've kind of done the same thing with your book and other books, of course, that you've written. As an author aiming at children with this kind of a story and this kind of a tale, why is that decision so important to focus on Amelia, the woman or the young girl, and then how she lived more as, you know, instead of how she died necessarily?
Right. Well, you know, as you know, from having a 7-year-old yourself, kids learn new info by tacking it onto the scaffolding of what they already know. So it really makes sense to start with Amelia's early years because right. It's much more relatable to them.
Right.
And of course, it also, you know, gets across the idea that all of our accumulated experiences are what makes us, you know, who we are.
Gotcha.
So I think it's important to, you know, present it in the context that kids can best relate.
That makes sense. I want to switch a little bit and talk about Amelia's bond with her parents, because as you know, obviously parents are just extremely important. It was really strong, the bond that she had with her parents, both her mom and her dad, and she was always supported in her decisions to be different and stand out. There was no drawback there. I want to ask you something that I think is important, especially for all the young kids that follow the project and a lot of the younger adults that follow the project. How important a role do you think Amelia's parents played in her growing up to do the things that she ended up doing? And how important is it in general just for parents to support their kids and to nurture their dreams like Amelia's parents did?
Wow. Well, it's a great question, Chris. You know, in my life, family has always come first, and I have two wonderful children that we have a very close relationship, and they teach me every day, I teach them every day. But, you know, what was cool about Amelia is the kids learn more about it and they read the book. You know, they find out little things like her mom allowed her to wear pants instead of dresses every day. And that made a big difference to what she got to do. I think her mom was also an adventurer herself. I believe she was the first woman to climb Pikes Peak in Colorado. So she sort of had this adventurous spirit. And of course, her dad had a great sense of humor. And I love that about him in particular. And, you know, as parents, I think we all have these preconceived notions of what our kids should be.
Right.
And then when we relax and allow our kids to really discover who they really are, then I think they flourish. So I think, you know, the gifts parents give to kids are priceless. Two of the biggest gifts that, you know, I'm a huge proponent of is helping a child learn to read and also allowing kids the freedom to fail.
Yeah, that's a great comment. And that's actually a beautiful segue into the next question I wanted to talk to you about and ask you. And early in the book, in your book, and it's been the subject of other books too, there's an incident that's widely known as the roller coaster incident. And that's, for those who don't know, it's her Amelia and her sister and her uncle kind of created this makeshift ramp off the back of a shed, and they greased it with lard, and they kind of created a makeshift roller coaster that Amelia, of course, volunteered to be the first one to ride. And it, you know, ultimately this was an experiment that didn't end up going well. I mean, she crashed. It was her first official crash, so I like to lovingly say, that she ever experienced, but it did something to fuel her, I think. And I was talking to Mark Weekland about this, who wrote a children's book about, the day Amelia Earhart built a roller coaster a few weeks ago. She may have crashed, but she also tasted for the first time what it was like to fly. She would obviously fly for the first time officially years later. But as you talked about earlier, there's a lesson here in using quote unquote failures to fuel your success. Can you talk about, the importance of an event like this and what it might have done to light a fire under her, like to want to fly, maybe planted a seed that she didn't even know about later on that kind of grew into something more?
Yeah. I thought about this a little bit, Chris, and I really think that it had a lot to do with convincing her that she could be a problem solver. Mm. As soon as she crashed, she made the track less steep, and she kept tinkering and figuring out what's the solution. And when you become a problem solver, you begin to understand that much of your destiny is in your own hands. And so you kind of say to yourself, if I can fix this or figure out that, why can't I do other things? So I think that spirit of, self-fulfillment, or I can be a producer as well as a consumer, is this is innate feeling that allowed her to go on then and do some of the things that she did.
Yeah, that makes sense. I watched your TED talk a couple times, and in that talk, you spoke of making valuable connections between generations, and that got me thinking, of course, about Amelia. And Amelia continues to speak to children so long after she disappeared. She continues to demonstrate to kids that you can truly have, do, or be anything you want. What is it about Amelia that compels kids, especially young girls, to continue to latch onto her, 80 years after she disappeared now?
Yeah, that's a great question. The kids see her as a rebel at first. She liked to try new things. She was very brave. She had courage to do this. But then as they get to know her, they understand that she was kind of a no-nonsense person. And I think she acted in what she believed in, and kids have a lot of respect for that. So, for example, when she went to Toronto and she saw wounded soldiers, she decided immediately she wasn't going to go back to school. She was going to become a nurse's aide. Mm-hmm. And then as kids get a little bit older, my book is intended for kids who are, roughly in that third grade level. But as they get a little bit older and they learn a bit more about her, they also understand that she was vulnerable. There was a time when she just floundered. She didn't know what she wanted to do. Yeah. And they can especially relate to that as well. So it's kind of that combination of rebel, courageous person who made some mistakes and flailed a bit and finally found herself. Kids can really relate to that kind of model.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was talking with one of our other guests, Abby Gill Harrison, who's the founder of the Mars Generation. And We talked a lot about fear, and I wanted to ask you about that just as an educator and as someone who's kind of written and aimed for children. Amelia, as far as I can tell, was fearless. It's one of our monikers for the project. She really, if she ever was fearful of anything, she really had a great way of kind of hiding that fear or just not showing that fear outwardly. What do you, as far as kids that are out there that are maybe trying to do these things that may be monumental in nature, like Amelia did in the 1930s, what do you think it is about her as an icon to kind of look towards for that, and that kind of attracts, kids to that particular story? What do you think that is about that fearlessness that she showed or didn't show?
You know, I think along with her fearlessness, she was also a pragmatist. Mm. She actually said, all right, I need to make some money now in order to be able to afford a plane to fly. She was very smart about saying, she wasn't reckless, like I'm going to go off and I'm going to do something bizarre. And I think there's this, kids really should respect that careful, she built these expeditions as carefully as she could, and then she did it, but she wasn't reckless. She wasn't, you know, bizarre in what she tried to do. And so I think if you kind of take these huge endeavors, but you break them down into the day by day, how am I going to get there? You're the classic example of that, Chris. You decided you do this Chasing Earhart project, and it grows with every day because you take it one day at a time and you keep saying, why not? And you're very pragmatic about what the project is. So, you know, that models the way she handled her life, I think.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think so. And I think she was, what's interesting about her is that, you know, I talk to people like about this all the time. She was, you know, she had a way about her kind of walking a really fine line, which I thought was really interesting. She as she grew up and, you know, she became world famous, she loved kids. Mm-hmm. She was a natural with children, but she could hang with the men. She could, you know, as my dad would say, cuss like a Marine Corps DI. you know, she wasn't afraid to get her hands dirty. She knew a lot about, you know, her planes and aviation in general. I mean, she wasn't just a pilot. Do you know, it's interesting, just on a psychological standpoint, do you think that was kind of, you know, all her, or do you think it was like a dual role that she had to play? Or do you think that was just kind of different parts of her personality that she allotted to just shine through at certain times to certain people?
Oh gosh, I don't know for sure. I wish I would have known her in person, but you know, you're right. The prep that she did, the knowledge that she had, not afraid to get her hands dirty. You know, there's a makers movement out there right now that encourages kids to tinker and do things and make things. And I think that builds their confidence.
Yeah.
And you know, you're not afraid to climb into a plane if you understand how the engine works, you know, and if you understand the aerodynamics and all that. So, you know, really immersing yourself in your passion takes away some of the fear. All of a sudden the confidence comes over. We hear that all the time about people who do amazing things. They just say, well, I don't know, it just felt natural. It was what I was supposed to do.
Yeah, I think it was a natural thing for her. She tried so many different things, and that's another way I think kids can relate, and you touched on it earlier, is that she was a nurse in World War One. You know, she did that, and then, you know, she tried all these different jobs and, you know, to see what she wanted to do, and then, but the heart of it, I think, was always aviation, and she just kind of, it was something that drew her towards it. I think there's a shining example there of people that just, you know, if there's something that keeps on nagging at you and it keeps on being in the back of your mind, you should follow that dream and just go for it, no matter what obstacle you might hit. And God knows she ran into walls and walls and walls of obstacles along the way.
Isn't that true? And I think it's really important for kids to understand that opportunities are constantly being presented to us. And if you have blinders on, you don't see them.
Right.
So I think you have to be aware of what's going by. And occasionally, something's going to spark your interest, and you should have the courage to pursue it. You know, Amelia saw her first plane in, what was it, 1908, I'm thinking. But she really didn't get that spark that said her inner spark until 1920, when she saw a flying show and she said, oh my gosh, I have to do that. And within a year she had her pilot's license, because she wasn't buried, her head wasn't buried in all the other things. She was able to see the opportunity and then pursue it when it clicked with her soul. She knew it was the right time.
Yeah, it's a spark. I think you touched, you eloquently stated that it's really a spark. It's something that comes up, that happens, and when that spark kind of ignites that flame, you have to jump on it. The only I tell my son, you know, the only thing you have to do is act. I mean, you know, people and places and things will be moved into your path so that way you can do what you're supposed to do. But if you don't have the will to act, then, you know, it's going to pass you by. And I think that's, Amelia was a shining example of that. She knew how and when to act when something happened to itself, and, you know, the rest is history.
And, you know, you got to keep doing that your whole life. You know, we're all living longer. 30 years have been added to the average American life expectancy in the last 100 years. Mm-hmm. And I think some people think, well, you know, I've done something, or this is what I've always done. But there's always room to change and grow and learn new things. And I think we have to think of life as more in a cyclical nature rather than a linear progression.
Yeah, you make a lot of points there. Yeah. So 2017, obviously, she's hotter than she's ever been. It marks the 80th anniversary, 80-year anniversary of Amelia and Fred's disappearance. And I ask this question to everybody because the answers are always unique. What is it about this case in particular? I mean, people go missing all the time, but I mean, this particular case, this unsolved case that continues to capture the attention and fascination of the entire planet 80 years after it's happened. What is it about Amelia and this case in particular that you think?
Well, from my point of view, I think people immediately empathize with the tragedy. So you think of this woman crisscrossing the ocean, looking desperately for a place to land. And, you know, I think everybody feels that moment. Oh my gosh, how did it end? And of course, you know, the interest just grows deeper then. Yeah. Everybody wants to solve the mystery. It's still a grand mystery. What happens? There's something so tantalizing about trying to be the one to figure out how did it finally end and what happened. So I think everybody's pretty captivated. And then what's pretty cool about Amelia, as you know, is that once you get past the story of the end, the great tragedy, she's even more intriguing when you learn the story of the beginning.
Yes, that's what we're trying to do. It's one of our, I don't want to say obstacles, but it's one of the things that we're trying to kind of put out there for folks to see that, you know, she lived, you know, just shy of 40 years before she disappeared. You know, there's people like to focus on the last, you know, the last leg of her last flight that she ever completed right before she disappeared. But there's 39 years before that, that of incredible life that she lived and incredible examples. And, you know, in addition to the accolades and the world records and all the stuff that she attained, There's an incredible life there and an incredible story there. And I think that's what a lot of folks don't really know about. I mean, if you talk to the average person on the street and you say the name Amelia, they'll say Earhart, but you know, they won't really be able to say, well, much other than the fact that isn't she the one that disappeared? So It's a struggle for us to kind of talk about that life. But I think books like yours really kind of help folks like us who are trying to you know, talk about how she lived and not how she died. You know, so it's important. I think a lot of folks are a lot of authors are doing that. And that's really great. It's a great service you're doing, I think.
Oh, thanks, Chris. You know, I've been in educational publishing for 20, 30 years now, and things have changed. In the past, we used to only care about cognitive skills. We wanted to make sure kids learn science, reading, math, social studies. We still care about that. But we also know now that the non-cognitive skills are just as important. And those are things like, you know, problem solving, emotional and social skill development, persistence, creativity, work ethics. And Amelia actually personified all of those things. Yeah. So she's a lovely example to use right now, today, in what we're trying to accomplish. And, you know, my favorite quote of Amelia is, when a great adventure is offered to you, you don't refuse it. That's all.
Yeah.
I love that sentence. I love that quote. So I think it's good for kids to hear stuff like that.
Yeah, it's very true. I remember when she met GP for the first time and she had, you know, he asked her, you know, why do you want to fly? And her simple answer was, well, why not? That's it.
Yep.
There's no long drawn out answer of why she had these dreams. So she just said, well, why not? I think that kind of really summarizes the kind of woman that she was. I mean, this is a woman that, you know, flew that experimental autogyro halfway across the country after getting 15 minutes of instruction, you know, like, okay, got it. And you know, she promptly flew it and crashed it. And it's like, I don't really think it's, you know, and just, she was just, you know, that's my favorite story of her. It's just an incredible, you know, she was one in a million, if she really was. And,
yeah, amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I think kids can learn to be that one in a million like her. And I think everybody certainly has the potential to grow up and be one in a million and do these fantastic things. There truly are no limits now. And I think she's an example of that.
I think it's a great premise. And if every kid knows that, who knows what we can accomplish in the future.
Yep, agreed. So, where can everybody find your work online and follow you social media wise? Can you plug your website and all that good stuff?
Sure. Thanks so much. I'm at katejerome.com, and you can follow my Facebook author page, Kate B. Jerome, on Facebook, and you can follow me on Twitter at Kate_Jerome.
And I would recommend everybody go out there and YouTube your TED Talk, because it's a really great TED Talk. I've watched it a couple times.
So. Thanks, Chris. That was a blast. Thank you very much.
Definitely. Well, any closing thoughts you want to leave with our listeners before we let you go?
Well, again, I just want to encourage people to support kids and their reading endeavors and help them understand that they have the potential inside them and help them realize it. I'm a huge advocate for for children and helping them explore and learn and read and do. And so I often say that, you know, reading opens a door for kids, but conversations are what give them the courage to walk through them. So I'm hoping that people will help kids open doors and push them through.
Beautifully stated. Kate, thank you so much for sitting in on the podcast. They were really honored to have you aboard. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Chris. It's a pleasure.
So that was Kate Jerome. We really hope you enjoyed that interview. We really went, I think, got a good perspective on children and education and sort of how Amelia Earhart fits into that aspect. We have much, much more, I promise you, with Kate Jerome coming up, especially next summer. We're going to be talking with her and featuring her in a very special event that we've teased a little bit here that we're going to be talking about a lot more in depth in the coming months. So be on the listen and the lookout for that. We'll be talking about that on our website. We'll be talking about that on the podcast, pretty much all over social media. And Kate Jerome is very much involved in that event. So a lot more from Kate in the near future. Now, as always, before we wrap up for this week's episode of Chasing Earhart, I want to tell you a little bit about who we have coming up next week. Now, next week we have author Sylvia Wrigley, who wrote a really neat book. It's called Unable to Reach You by Radio, and it really kind of breaks down the disappearance and what she believes happened to Amelia Earhart, and really focuses kind of on the radio signals and how a lot of different things may have gone wrong in the last section of the flight, of the world flight. And she has a really great perspective, and she runs a really great website too called Fear of Landing that we'll be talking about with her as well. And it's a really great interview. We had a lot of fun talking with her, and we're very honored to have her. So that's next week, Sylvia Wrigley on Chasing Earhart podcast. That will be episode 13. Before we get out of here, I want to thank Vanessa one more time for joining us. Vanessa, we really appreciate you coming in. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
And as always, my name is Chris Williamson. I am the project creator of Chasing Earhart, and we will see you in 7 days with Sylvia Wrigley.